Podcast, a bi-weekly discussion on books and reading. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Anne.
And we are librarians with the Beaufort County Library in South Carolina. This week we will be talking about beach reads. Anne, what do you think of when you think of a beach read?
I think a beach read has to be something that's light. There needs to be something where you can just sit on a beach and not really have a lot of deep thoughts going on. There's something to be said about just letting go for a little while and being carefree. So it seems like when I think of a beach read, if it's something that's really literary, I can't picture it on the beach, but if it's light and has a pink cover, then it seems perfect for the beach.
Yeah. I think the same thing in general.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially if you have distractions on the beach. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't have kids. You don't have kids.
Right.
But I know people who have kids have to watch their children when they're on the beach because they are, you know, running towards water and things. But for me, I go both ways. I want something that is light and summery in
mm-hmm.
feel sometimes, but then I also had a summer where I read a lot of classics.
Oh.
Because beach reads, for me that summer, meant hours spent
mm-hmm.
focused on one particular book.
Mm-hmm.
Where if I had tried to tackle the classics earlier in my life or at
yeah.
other times of the year, it was almost like impenetrable to me because I would read a few pages before I'd go to bed and then the next night try to pick it back up. And
right.
the language is so different from how we speak and how we read, you know, what we read now. And so it was just, I just couldn't get into it. But that summer, for some reason, it sort of clicked. And because I could just sit there and read for hours at
mm-hmm.
a time, I was able to do that. Or I had a friend who came to visit last summer. And she spent a few days with me before her family was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And she sat and read The Goldfinch for a couple of
oh,
days
wow. yeah.
because it was that sort of environment where
yeah.
she could just sit and focus instead of chasing after her kids or
right.
being interrupted every 5 minutes for something from
right.
somebody needing something. So I think that traditionally the beach reads is sort of the fast-paced, page-turner, light read. But then I also think there is a chance to do some of those more complex or longer books, maybe.
Right.
It doesn't even need to be hard or complicated. It could just be long because
yeah.
you have time
yeah.
that you might not have other times of the year.
Yeah.
And we should say that we live in a place where we have beaches,
right.
but this also goes for if you're sitting by the swimming pool
right.
or out on your back porch in the summer with a glass of lemonade or
right.
whatever your drink of choice might be. So we tend to think of beach truly as being at the beach. And I think a lot of people take vacations in the summer and do go to the beach and stuff.
Right.
But these are just generally beachy reads in spirit
right.
more than actual location, right?
Right. And I think, too, like, going along with that, even if you, like airplane rides, I usually
right.
think of wanting a beach read, even though it's absolutely not on the beach
right.
when you want, but you have that long stretch of time. But it needs to be something that holds your attention for that long.
Right.
So even if... To me, if it can be a really long book, but maybe not something that you're having to look up a lot of words. You
right.
You can have complicated, but not sort of over your head complicated.
Yeah, not too dense,
right.
I would say, for
right.
me, or else I'm sleeping.
Right.
You know, if
right.
I'm sitting on an airplane or at the beach with a nice breeze off the ocean,
right.
and it's too hard to actually comprehend, which
mm-hmm.
doesn't take much for me sometimes,
right.
that's it. You know, I'm out. I'm not going to sit there. I'm going to dread opening the book
right.
instead of really looking forward to it or trying to sneak in time
right.
to read a few more pages.
Right.
So I think that's, you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of people just, beach read gets thrown out there as
mm-hmm.
if everybody agrees on what it is, but different people might see it as a different thing. Somebody's,
right.
you know, a thriller could be a great beach read
right.
for somebody, that, and then somebody else wants the one, like, with the pink cover and the
right.
beach scene. You know, I think you can be pretty sure if they have a picture of, like, feet walking on a
right.
beach or something on sand, that's going to be a good book for the beach.
And then there's also books that I think of as beach reads that just take place in the summer, but they
yeah.
don't have beach setting, and they're not light, they just have a summer setting.
Right.
And
or
so,
hot.
Yeah.
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 And so as opposed to reading something where you want to put on a sweater because it would be cozy and kind of cuddling a blanket, then you want something where it's there's breezes, there's sun, there's
yeah.
There's maybe nice cool drinks involved.
Yeah.
So.
Preferably people serving those
right.
drinks. all right, well, I think that's good. I think that we sort of covering what we think of as
right.
beech trees. Now, do you have some examples of
yes.
beech trees that you would suggest?
Sure. So the first one that I read recently that is more the traditional beech tree of being very light and, mm-hmm. and having a very pretty cover was called Little Beech Street Bakery by Jenny Colgan. And she's a British writer that I hadn't read before, and I originally picked it up because it had this gorgeous cupcake. It was a pink and blue cupcake on the cover.
I mean, yeah.
So then I started to read it, and it's actually funny because she doesn't bake anything like that in the book.
Oh, really?
It's strictly bread, so it's sort of funny that the cover, even the British cover, has little cakes and treats on the cover, but she doesn't do any of that. So the setup of the book is that it's about a woman named Polly who... has been dating a man for a really long period of time, and they have a graphic design business together. And the economy does a downturn, and they just don't have any business. And so eventually that starts to wear on them and as a couple, both professionally and romantically. And so they just decide that they need to dissolve the business and kind of go their separate ways for a little while. So the only place that she can afford after they declare bankruptcy is this small seaside village in Cornwall.
Oh,
of course. So I wish that were the place that I could go to to save money. So she goes to this it's she doesn't know anyone there. It just happens to be something that her I think lawyer suggests to her. So she starts baking bread as her sort of stress relief. She doesn't have a job. She doesn't have anything to do necessarily there, but she has this apartment and she just bakes bread. And so of course people start to notice that she's baking bread because she's right by the water and there's all these fishermen that are nearby. And she starts to give them loaves of bread and she gets this reputation. And so then of course there's romantic interests from a few different men that are intrigued by her baking, and there's tension because there's already a baker in town and so she shouldn't be doing this. And,
drama.
the intense drama of rival bakers. So there has to be romantic love triangles and she has to choose someone of who she wants to go with. And, normally, when I read chick lit, I kind of get annoyed by it because I feel like the decisions could be, if people would just talk to each other, then things would be a lot more simple and they would figure things out. And in this one, there's definitely information that's held back from people, but it makes sense of why it's held back.
For legitimate reasons, maybe.
Yeah, it's not just someone where you see something where... There's a situation where everyone's aware of all the factors in it and they just choose to not talk to each other about those factors.
Uh-huh.
But this is actually someone withholding information. So so I was pleasantly surprised by it because I normally sort of get annoyed by romantic entanglement books. But there's something about the seaside village. There's the tourist season that comes in and at that point she thinks of herself as a local. So she's annoyed by the tourists, really saying what everyone else is. And it was just kind of a delightful book. I hadn't expected to like it so much, but the idea of starting over in a place where you don't know anyone and you just sort of have this one skill that you didn't think of as being a marketable skill that you decide to make into your life was just, there's something really appealing about that.
Oh, isn't that like the dream?
Yeah.
That's something you just like to do on your own, can actually make money.
Yeah, that would be the greatest.
And that's a particular, I read a lot of romances, as you know, and that's one of the sub-genres of romance that I really like is the small town story of sort of the outsider and how she acclimates to being in the small town, and it's all these quirky characters, and I just love it.
Right.
I just love it.
Yeah, you would love this book.
I know, I have to read it. That's definitely going on my summer reading list. In fact, I think it was already on my endless to-be-read list, but I'm going to bump it up because I've read other things by her that I really liked.
Okay.
From earlier in her career,
mm-hmm.
you know, she started writing, I think, in the 90s, maybe.
Okay.
And she's written quite a few books, not all of which are available here in the United States because she's British, but her most recent ones definitely are, and then
mm-hmm.
a few of them here and there are. So I've been able to track a few of her. I'm somebody who I sort of like to read in order of...
Yeah, me too.
I don't know why. I just... especially, it's not a series, so it doesn't really make a difference.
It's just necessary.
I know. I hadn't thought of myself really as doing that consciously until I read a book in which one of the characters did that,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, I love this idea. Like, now I'm going to purposely try to read things. If I find an author that I like, go back and read in order of what they wrote, just to see the development
right,
and
right.
the changes in their
right.
writing. So I'm still sort of on her later, or her earlier books,
mm-hmm.
I should say, not the more recent ones.
Right.
But I think I have to skip a few now because some of her early ones were available, and then now
right.
a bunch of them aren't. And so now I'll come up to, she's written a few, one about a chocolate shop or something
that
like that.
Weird.
So there's good themes. All good things, except they make you hungry. That's
yeah.
the only thing.
Terrible. And this one actually just came out with a sequel. So I
oh.
think the reason I got this first one was because they were trying to promote the sequel, and so I was given a copy of it, and
oh.
I thought, oh, this is such a fun read, and
yeah.
then it's great when you find that there's already the
yes.
continuation of the
yes.
story.
And you don't even have to wait.
Yeah, it's great. I love that.
Well, so that sounds so good. I'm so excited to read that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. How about you? What was
okay, one? So the first one I thought of, which was easy to think of, because summer is right in the title, so each
oh.
read kind of goes along. It's called Second Chance Summer by Morgan Matson, and it is... a teen book. I read a lot of teen books
mm-hmm.
as well. And it's a teen book that came out several years ago, and it takes place over one summer at a lake house. There's a young girl, she's 17 years old, her name is Taylor, and her father has recently been diagnosed with terminal pancreatic cancer.
Oh, okay.
So her family decides there, she has a couple of brothers or sisters, and they decide that, and everybody's kind of going their separate ways, you know, busy with school and life and
mm-hmm.
parents with jobs and stuff. And so they decide, because of this diagnosis, they're going to go back to their lake house where they used to spend their summers when she was younger
mm-hmm.
and spend this time there as a family together.
Oh, okay.
And so it's definitely a sad story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely not one that's going to leave you happy with a smile on your face the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I... luckily, I haven't had anybody close in my life who has dealt with this sort of thing before, but I think she probably portrays it pretty well in that there are definitely hard moments and sad
mm-hmm.
moments, but there's also a lot of just normalcy that goes on
mm-hmm.
in a family, you know, when it's not in every minute of every day that things are awful, especially
right.
because it's the parent that is in the situation,
right.
so they want to make things as normal for their kids. So they go back to this lake house, and something has happened the last time they were there that Taylor is a little hesitant to see the people that she knew then. She had a best friend that she was very close to, but they no longer speak, and so she's worried about what that interaction is going to be like. And then she had her first love was there,
yeah.
and then she doesn't talk to him, and something happened. So she is all nervous, the typical sort of teenage emotions of going back. And so she gets a summer job and has to interact with those two in particular, these people that she's not quite sure about wanting to see. So it's about rebuilding a friendship and very normal reactions to somebody who has fallen out of your life, and you're a little uncertain about how this is going to go.
Right.
And, you know, that's something I think everybody can identify
yeah,
with,
definitely.
You know, if you're 17 or not. And then the feeling of, you know, that person that was in your life when you were first falling in love with somebody, and just the sweet emotions and the harder emotions that come
mm-hmm.
along with that, and the balance that Taylor has between her family wanting to spend time with her father as
mm-hmm.
he is ill, but also with the teenagers that are surrounding her that
right.
she at first maybe doesn't want to spend time with, but it starts getting more comfortable and starts wanting to spend time with other people. So it's just such a good story. It's one like when we talked about the environment or the hot, like being at the lake, you know, and they're all walking around like barefoot at the lake, and the screen doors are slamming and stuff.
Right.
And you just feel that sense of summer and being on vacation kind of feeling. But then it's also got some depth to it. It's not totally just a lightweight book with the illness, and like I said, it is sad. So if you're reading, you might want to have a few tissues to your side, because it's a sad one. But it's also, I think, very realistic, and just brings she draws the emotions very well in all aspects, in the happier times and the sadder times.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just really, really loved it. She's an author. I like all of what she's written, but that's definitely my favorite of hers.
Okay. When she goes back for the summer, do you know going into it what has happened in the
that's a great thanks
Ooh.
For saying that. So yeah, it's sort of interspersed in the story and flashbacks of what has happened, so you're not sure. She refers to it, you know, in these tones of, you know, something has happened, and that she doesn't want to see these people, and she's feeling guilty about how things left. I should say that, you know, it's something she feels like she had a hand in. Like, it's not like something that was done to her.
Right.
And so that makes her even more nervous about seeing these people and how they'll receive her, because they have remained friends the whole time that she was gone. And so, it's
that's great.
I like that sort of, it adds a little bit of tension to the story too.
Yeah, sort of intrigue that you are trying to find out what exactly happened. I love books like that where there's something where everyone's at a point past an event and and you just have to kind of piece together what's
you're sort of like your little hints are thrown as you go along, like, well, is this what happened or is that what happened? So I mean, it's not a mystery by any stretch of the imagination, but it has that element to it of a little bit of tension, a little bit of suspense that you're trying to figure out what happened. So it's just a well rounded story, you know. It's not just light brainless stuff, but it has a little bit of that summer feeling of being a teenager in summer and carefree in one way, but then having the sickness balance that. So so it's great if you if it sounds at all intriguing.
That sounds great to me.
Yes. All right. So Anne, give me another one.
So the next one I thought of isn't at all summery. And it's not light in the sense that it's carefree, but it's kind of. It's very, very fast-paced, so I thought it would be a good beach read. It's called All the Old Knives by Olin Steinhauer, and he's known for writing a lot of spy novels. It's sort of his deal. And so this one just came out this spring, and it's only about 200-something pages long, so it's you can definitely read it in an afternoon on the beach. And it basically takes place all at a dinner table. And so the author said that he wanted to write a spy novel. It was sort of an exercise for him to see if he could write this novel that was intriguing and engaging and had a good fast-moving plot, but have it basically just be through dialogue of two people at a dinner table. So he does incorporate some flashbacks, so it's not entirely just this conversation. Mm-hmm. But basically the story is that it's about two former CIA agents, or actually one is a former CIA agent and the other one is still working. And they used to be romantically involved when they were working in Vienna together. And since the woman of the relationship she's left the CIA and she's gotten married and had kids. Okay. And so we know something in the past happened to stop this relationship, but we don't know why. And so her former boyfriend is still working and still a spy, and so they come together to sort of catch up. And it sounds innocent enough when it starts out, but there's a lot more going on. So I think in the 10 years earlier, or a few years earlier, they had been involved in a situation where a plane had been taken over by terrorists in Vienna, and it was just parked at the airport there. But these terrorists were holding a plane of people hostage, and so all of these different countries are working to free these hostages, and something, you know, went really badly wrong.
Oh, wow.
So when we're hearing them talk about it, we don't know exactly what happened or how it developed or even really what the situation was. They just keep referring to the airline situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you're reading the story, you piece together through the conversation and these flashbacks that there was an agent on the plane that somehow was compromised, and so there's questions of whether there were double agents.
Oh,
and
loyalty.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, and it just is an absolute page turner. I think I read it in an afternoon because you're given, the author is really good at giving you just enough to make you want to keep going.
Uh-huh.
And so there's the tension of what happened in the past and what the international situation was, but then there's also the tension of their relationship and why they decided to not be in a relationship anymore. And we know all these things, all these choices that she's made since then, but not all the characters are aware of everything that was going on at the time that they broke up. So it's really, really fun. I had never read one of his novels before, and I've always... as I'm talking, I'm going to say, I don't like to read anything because I don't really do chick lit. I don't really do thrillers very often, but there are a lot of thriller writers that I just am not a fan of.
Right.
So I think I lump everything in with those writers because they all have the same covers.
Yes.
And that's not really fair.
Right.
And I'm learning as I try to read more widely that there are all kinds of things that I should be reading and I shouldn't just judge them by the cover.
Yeah. Imagine that.
So I was really impressed with his writing. I thought that he did a really good job with the tension in it and kind of piecing out information at a good pace, but keeping it really readable, but also intelligent. So I was a fan.
That sounds so good. That reminds me a little bit of The Dinner. Did you read The Dinner?
Yes. Yeah,
yeah, where, I know I can't think of the author's
it's
name, Herman
Cock,
where the two couples get together and, you know, something
yes.
has happened and they're at dinner and going through and it flashes
yeah.
back and you're piecing
oh,
together. It's so tense.
Yeah.
It's so tense.
And that one is, I mean, the things that happen in that book are just crazy. This
yes.
isn't quite to
yeah.
the level of crazy, but it still is. There are lots of twists
yeah.
in the book, and things once you think you have things figured out, and there aren't even any pages left,
yeah.
then the very end he twists and turns around
really?
Again. So it's fun.
I
it's
love that
great thing.
I love twists that you don't see coming. You know,
yeah.
sometimes you sort of see them telegraphed ahead of
yes.
time, and it's still fun to read, but not quite as satisfying maybe. But then
right.
I mean, you're really taken by surprise. I love that.
Right. Well, and right now I feel like everyone is trying to put twists in
yes.
books,
yes.
which I don't know if that's a Gone Girl.
Yeah.
But everything is this isn't what you think it is.
Yeah.
And so there's only so many possibilities
right.
that something can be.
Right.
So I like that this one, I there were certain things I saw coming.
Yeah.
And I think that he plays with that, where he knows that people are smart and they're
yeah.
going to be able to see that there are only so many possibilities.
Right.
But then you don't expect as many alternate routes at that point.
I love that too, because even if you know, like we're saying, you know, there are twists, but even so, sometimes if you know there's a twist coming, you're reading it with that in mind.
Right.
What's the twist going to be?
Right.
Can I figure it out ahead of time? But if he throws you off multiple times, then you're
right.
totally in it. You know,
right.
you don't know, is there another twist coming? Maybe, maybe not.
Right.
So that's great too, because I think sometimes knowing, I know somebody who read Gone Girl and was disappointed because she didn't feel like the twist was big enough, because
yeah.
everybody kept talking about this crazy
yeah,
twist.
Definitely.
And so then when she read it, she still, even after the major twist happened, she still kept waiting for the big twist
right.
because she didn't think it was that big of a deal, because that's all anybody kept saying.
Right.
So yeah, I think maybe they're doing a disservice to the books when they advertise them as having these big twists,
yeah.
because then that's what people are looking towards, and then they're reading it not just for the enjoyment or the experience of reading
right.
it, they're reading it trying to figure out what the
right.
big twist is going to
right.
be.
Right, and it takes you out of it
yeah.
quite a bit when you just are thinking, well, is this, so there are these many characters and they can pair up in these different
right.
ways, it just
right.
gets to be more mathematical and
yes.
just interesting.
Just like
so.
Absorbed in
yeah.
the book. Yeah. Well, that sounds so good.
Yeah.
I'm going to...
Fun one.
Yeah. I'm going to have to read that one too. Well, I have one that's sort of we planned well, because mine is Before I Go to Sleep by S.J. Watson,
oh, yes.
which is also a tense thriller kind of a book. That one is about a woman who is in her 40s, and when she was in her 20s, she had an accident that has caused some memory loss,
mm-hmm.
where she can only form new memories throughout the day, and then once she goes to sleep, she forgets everything and wakes up the next morning and has no memory of anything. So right there is just, you know, this is tense, right?
Right.
She's going to wake up every day not knowing who she is, where she is, anything like that. So her husband, each morning when she wakes up, explains, you know, this is who you are, this is who I am, this is our life, this is the story, and that's how the book opens, you know, this
right.
is what you're learning. Well, then soon after that, her husband leaves to go to work, and she gets a phone call from a doctor saying, you are Christine, and I am your doctor, and your husband told you these things, but they're not true. And you have a journal that you write in every day, and this is where it is located, and you need to go find it and read it so
uh-huh.
that you can get caught up on what's really going on. And it's so good! Because, I mean... who do you trust right away, right?
Right
from the get-go. Like, you have her husband, who she's woken up next to, saying one thing, and then you have a stranger calling on the phone telling her something different. So she goes, and the book then follows her through as she's reading her journal, and the story is slowly coming out about, you know, what her life she thinks is and was and what it maybe actually is, and she's not sure who she can trust. And she knows that she's racing against time, because at night when she goes to bed, by tomorrow morning, she's going to have to redo it all. And this
right.
has been many years. You know, this happened when she was in her 20s, and now she's in her 40s. So she has many years of memories to read through and
right.
try to sift through and find what's really happening. And so it is so fast-paced and suspenseful, and it's definitely one of those books where it was just like a few more pages. You know, I just want to read
right.
a few more pages before setting it down. And it would be one that when you're sitting on the beach again, like you said with your book, Not summer, not beach,
right.
nothing having to do with that, except that it's so absorbing and compelling, and you just can't wait to find out what happens next. And so if you have time even just to pick up a few pages, you're sucked right back into that story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you are having somebody, some little small child, you know, watching
right.
your attention to help build a sandcastle or whatever, you can read a little bit of it and it'll just draw you right back in immediately.
Right.
And so it's one that even though you probably want to sit down and read all in one go because it's so good and
mm-hmm.
you just have to find out what happens next, it's also one that you could be interrupted as it goes along. And because that would actually, now that I'm saying that, be a sort of a good comparison to what she's going
right,
through, because then you're trying to remember exactly what's happened to her as you're reading, and you know, if you have to set it down and pick it up back up because it's taken you out of the story.
Well, you have that whole I have to read as much as I can
because
I won't have so much
time. Yeah, exactly. You have this limited period of time. You have to read it before you go to sleep because tomorrow morning you might not remember what you read. But it is so good. In fact, there's a movie they made of it with Nicole Kidman,
uh-huh.
I think last year,
yes.
or this past year maybe. Have you seen it?
I did.
Is it good?
I thought it was okay. I liked the book better.
Okay.
Because there's just a lot more detail in the book
mm-hmm.
and a lot more that is kind of at stake, I think, in the book. But I thought the movie was fun.
Okay.
It was a fun movie. Yeah. They do some things in the movie to make you suspicious of other characters that don't take place in the book that I thought was just kind of trying too hard to add in a suspense where they already had enough in the book
mm-hmm.
that they could have used. So I'm not sure why they made... I mean, I filmmakers know what they're
right.
doing, so, but for me as a viewer who had read the book, I thought, well, they could have just incorporated that part from the book instead of adding this other sort of side story.
Yeah.
So that was my only complaint about it,
yeah.
I think. But I think the book is really, really fun. And
yeah.
It was definitely one that I kept reading really, really
yes.
late.
I remember reading that and just not being able to put it aside for anything.
Yeah.
You know, everything was getting pushed to the end of the to-do list
yeah.
because I wanted to just keep reading that book, and I just thought it was so, so fabulous. In fact, she has a new book coming out, I think, this summer. Actually, I'm saying she. I'm assuming
I think
she,
it's a man.
Is it a
yeah,
man?
As
Jay.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. So it's
which
a
I just found, I just barely read this book like a month ago.
So oh, really?
Very funny that you're discussing
it. Oh, that's
so
funny.
And I think it's because someone had said that there was a new book by the same author,
yes.
and so I looked on the Goodreads page,
mm-hmm.
and there was... strange. I was picturing this woman, and
yeah.
It was a very bearded man.
Oh, that's so funny.
Well,
yeah, I always assumed, I guess, because the main character
right.
is a woman,
right.
and he really taps into that well of the
yeah.
woman. So I just assumed that S.J. Watson was a woman, but apparently he is a man. I'm sorry, Mr. Watson.
I did not mean to do that to you.
Well, I think that's where I'll leave it with that one. I don't want to say too much. I think just the premise of that she's lost her memories
yeah.
and needs to recreate them each day is
yeah.
intriguing enough because you don't want to know for sure too much about that book before reading it.
Yeah, there's definitely, there are things at the very beginning that they tell you to create this sense of unease
mm-hmm.
that, I mean, beyond just the fact that she doesn't remember being
mm-hmm.
on that morning,
mm-hmm.
but just parts of her diary where you think, wait, she wrote that and now she doesn't remember what she wrote.
Right.
And, there's
yes.
just so many parts where you second guess yourself as a reader.
Yeah.
It's really, really fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it quite
yeah.
a bit.
Good.
So my next book is also a suspense novel, and this is actually one of my top five favorite books of all time.
Oh, wow.
So I picked The Talented Mr. Ripley by Patricia Highsmith. And it's, from my understanding, I hadn't heard about the book until until the movie came out, but it came out several years ago, and so I was younger when that came out, and I didn't know about her as an author, but apparently she wasn't famous really in this country until this movie came out. I think there may be some room for argument in there, but I think she became much more popular as a result of this movie. So so I think people sort of know the story of The Talented Mr. Ripley because of the movie that came out in 2000-something.
Yeah, what was that?
Maybe
like
90s?
15 years ago,
yeah.
maybe? Yeah.
So the basic premise of the book is that it's about a young man named Tom Ripley, and he lives in New York in the 1950s, and he is not terribly well-to-do, and so he is, you just get a taste of his life before he, the bulk of the book happens,
mm-hmm.
But it sounds as though he's just sort of scraping by and kind of living an aspirational life
mm-hmm.
that he doesn't actually have himself. So he's approached by the father of a young man that was his acquaintance in college, and the father thinks that they're better friends than they are, and so he says, "Will you go find my son? He's living in Italy, and he needs to come home. I can't remember now if there's a particular reason he needs for him to come home, but I think it's just that the father is thinks that he's wasting his life
mm-hmm.
Painting and jazz and all the things that you do choice.
Slacking
you
off
when you have money to do it. So Tom says, sure, I'll go do this. This is great. So they send him over to Italy, and he, the young man's name is Dickie Greenleaf, and he finds him in the setting of the book is the Bay of Naples in Italy, which is just one of the most beautiful places on earth.
Uh-huh.
So there's the problem, though, that Dickie doesn't really know him that well. So Tom has to sort of pretend that there's a better relationship than there actually is between them to become part of his group. And so he doesn't have a lot of interest in just going and bringing Dickie home. He wants to have the same lifestyle that Dickie has.
Okay.
So he ingratiates himself into the social group that he's in, and they become close friends. And as it becomes a better friendship, then it turns into a darker friendship.
Okay.
And so then there's a sinister element of Tom having some dreams that he can't have. I'm not explaining that part very well. He decides that that Dickie's life is the one that he wants.
Okay.
And so he's going to do anything he can to get that life.
Okay.
And so I don't want to tell too much.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of things that happen pretty early on in the book, but I won't go too much into those things. So, but it's just is a really, really dark book. And Tom is one of those characters that you kind of are horrified by, but you love him at the same time. And so it brings up a lot of emotions in yourself where you think, oh my gosh, why am I rooting for this character
right.
that has all of these terrible wants and he is doing terrible things to people, but you sort of love him at the
same
time. So this is a great beat read in my opinion, because not only is it really page turning and there are all kinds of twists that you want to find out how he can possibly live this lifestyle. But it also takes place in Italy in the 50s.
Yeah.
And so they're riding Vespas, they're going to Rome to listen to jazz in clubs, and they're having these gorgeous dinners on the terrace overlooking the Bay of Naples.
Uh-huh.
And it just has this kind of sun-dappled feel to it.
Sultry kind of.
Yeah. And so even though I think of it, I definitely could read it in the winter and feel very, like there's sort of an oppressiveness to the book that comes through the plot, but the setting is anything but that.
Okay.
So it has this sort of opposite feeling to
right.
it, which is really fun when you're reading a book like that.
Yeah.
So I've recommended this book just backwards and forwards to people. It's one of my absolute favorite books. It's so much fun to read. So, but I've never read it on a beach. I need to actually read it on a
beach. Well, I saw the movie when it came out in the theater and really, really enjoyed that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if enjoy is the best word, because it, like you said, it's
right.
very dark.
Right.
It is a very dark story, but there also is that sun-dappled quality,
right.
and, you know, this beautiful scenery in Italy and all this stuff, and the costumes, because it takes place
right.
in the 50s. But I really liked it, and so I remember at the time never having heard that it was even a book, like you said,
uh-huh.
and ever since then I've had it in my mind that it would be something to read, but almost felt like, well, I saw the movie, I don't know if I need to read the book, but with your description, I feel like
it's
I need to read
it.
The book.
Yeah, it's she's a really, really amazing writer,
uh-huh.
and so she, I think that those same emotions come through in the movie, but being in his head a little bit more in the book is really, really fun.
Okay.
Maybe fun is not the right word, but it's just so skillfully done, because there's a, I think every person I've talked to about this book that I recommended it to has agreed with me that there's a point where you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm rooting for a character that I shouldn't be rooting for, and this is really kind of upsetting in a way, but not in a way that makes you feel too bad. It's still more fun.
Yeah. It's almost like Dexter. Did you ever watch that TV show?
No, I haven't.
Okay,
I've
the same
that.
Idea in that when I watched that, I remember thinking to myself, why am I rooting for this man not to be caught?
Right.
You know, he is a serial killer.
Right, right.
But yet, because it's from his perspective in a way, you know,
right.
it's like he's the protagonist of the story.
Right.
You don't want him. You want him to get away with what he's
right.
doing. So it sounds like maybe a similar situation.
Yeah, it definitely has that same feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're going through and you see how each choice that he's making, it's leading to other consequences that he's going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
And you're just so just overwhelmed with not knowing how he's going to make these next choices and how he's going to get away with different things. And so your heart is racing for him because you can sort of put yourself in that position of if I had done these things, then would I be able to do the next step.
Right.
And so there's,
oh my gosh.
That's such a good book. And there's, I think, 5 more books in the series.
That's what I was going to ask. So it is part of a series?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the later ones, he's an adult. Or, I mean, he's an adult, but he's a young man in this first book. And I think it jumps, but I haven't read the next ones.
Okay.
But I know that they go on for quite a while.
Okay. This is so funny. I'm just sitting here thinking, we created this podcast to give recommendations to other people, and all it's going to do is make me want to read all the books that you recommend. I'm going to go back to the library this afternoon and pull these 3 books off the shelf and be all ready to go for my weekend. all right, so this is so funny because my last book also takes place in Italy, which I didn't even realize that we were doing it sort of in the same time period. My last book is Beautiful Ruins by Jess Walter.
I've heard about this.
It's very good. So I read this several years ago at the pool, so almost beach adjacent, I'll
yes.
say. And it is a little bit hard to describe because it starts in early 1960s, in 1962, in a small seaside town in Italy, and there is a young Italian man who owns a small hotel that is not doing so well, and he is trying to cause people to come there. And one day this young beautiful American girl shows up. She is an actress, and she is brought to the hotel to recuperate because they say she has a stomach ailment, a very serious stomach ailment, and she has been a part of the Cleopatra shoot with Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor.
Oh,
that was
wow.
like this huge debacle
yeah.
at the time, right? And so, but she's this minor actress. So
uh-huh.
she has been brought there. And this young man thinks that she's just absolutely gorgeous and wants to do everything he can to take care of her. Because, of course, in his mind, this is somebody from Hollywood. And he can, if he's successful in taking care of her and the people that have brought him from the studio or brought her from the studio, then maybe he'll get more people.
Yeah.
And it's a small village, and so you have the other people in the village that make appearances. But then this is where, like I said, it's a hard book to describe because then it jumps to about 50 years later in Hollywood, and there is a producer who does what he calls Wild Pitch Friday, where he takes pitches on movies from anybody who wants to come in and pitch anything. Like, the most ridiculous concepts can be pitched to him on this day. And so he and his assistant are sitting there, and she's a younger woman, you know, sort of a beleaguered assistant kind of a person in this Hollywood megalomaniac that is her boss. And they're sitting there, and it's the end of the day, and they're tired, and they've heard all these crazy pitches, and none of them are going to be made into movies, when this elderly Italian man walks in, and he is looking for the woman that he last saw in 1962.
Ooh.
So, this is one where, like we talked about at the beginning, it's complex in a way. It's very easy to read, you know, it's not hard with archaic language or anything like that, but because of the multiple storylines, there are all these different people and different storylines, and you know they're all connected, and you know they're all going to be woven together, but it's hard to keep track if you read in little bits.
Uh-huh.
So this is one that's going to benefit from a prolonged reading
yeah.
period. You know, otherwise I think it could get a little bit confusing.
Okay.
But it's so, so great because the story goes in different ways than maybe you were thinking it was going to go, but then in the ways that are the most satisfying that it's
yeah.
going to go at the same time. And so, and I love, this is like my literary catnip, these kind of books that have these multiple threads that are going to come together at some point,
mm-hmm.
and you just enjoy the ride of reading about them and watching them all come together. And, you know, you get the story of the assistant, and you get the story of the producer, and you get the story from 1962 with the actress, and then Richard Burton makes an appearance, and there are stories from the Cleopatra set when everything was falling apart.
Yeah.
And it's just this wonderful, wonderful read. I just really enjoyed it. And if you're an audiobook listener, I've heard that the audiobook is very good as well.
Ooh.
So I haven't done that. I read the physical book, but like I said, sitting by the pool. But it, apparently the narrator is very good and has, I think it won an award, which now I can't think of what award it was, but the audiobook did win an award. And maybe the book too. I should have been better prepared because I don't know. But it's just, it's a really satisfying read, like I said, and I love the place, the Italy,
yeah.
and, you know, seaside, and the again, you can picture the fishing boats and stuff,
yeah.
and these old Italian men, you know, coming in with their haul at the end of the day, and this struggling hotel on the cliff that is just perched there. It's just so good. It's just, I don't want to say more about the story, because I think the unraveling of how everybody is connected is
right.
is very interesting to read, but it's just, it's like, it's delightful. I mean, it really is. It's so good.
Is it one where the stories are doing flashbacks, or is it...
It jumps around a little
okay.
bit. I will say that's why I think it's best to be read in several sittings if possible, or long
right.
stretches of time. I should
right.
you know, spread it out over as long as you want, but longer stretches of times, because it'll go from the 60s, like I said, to 50 years later, but then it goes back to
right.
Maybe the 90s, and then, you know, and then back to the 60s.
Right.
And then, so it's not a linear story. It's more of that, parallel, not even parallel, because there are multiple things going on,
right?
And you see things from 15 years prior and then in the present, and so I'm making it sound more confusing than it is, because he does a very good job of making it clear, the author does, but it's all like present tense when you're reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, like when you're in 1962, you're just in 1962.
Right.
It's not somebody looking back on 1962.
Right.
And then he jumps to the different times
mm-hmm.
with the different people. But it's just, it's
fascinating.
And it
so
makes you
funny.
Want to watch Cleopatra for sure,
oh, yeah.
because there's all this background drama with Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, and it just makes you want to, you know, read more about that and
right.
then go and watch the movie and see.
Oh
you know,
my gosh, that sounds like
a
so
huge
much
failure.
Fun. Yeah. Oh, that sounds like a great recommendation.
Yeah, it's perfect for summer,
yeah.
I would say. That it's a really good summer book,
uh-huh.
for sure. In closing, we're going to talk about what we're reading. So what are you reading right now, Anne?
I actually just finished a book this week that I really, really loved. It was the second time I read it. It was called 13 Steps Down by Ruth Rendell.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of strange because I run a mystery book club at my branch.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked this book to read months and months ago
mm-hmm.
For May. And then I was preparing for the book club and doing some author biography
mm-hmm.
stuff. And then I saw that Ruth Rendell had just died the week before.
Oh my gosh.
And so it was just a strange, like I kept reading the date thinking, 2015? Yeah, we're in 2015.
Right. This is right
so
now.
It was so, it was really great for preparing and just sort of to do like a kind of a moment of respect for this great
right,
author.
Yes.
And to be able to read these obituaries that have been published in the past week by people that also loved her books. So I consider Ruth Rendell to be one of the greats of the British mystery canon.
Mm-hmm.
So I put her with P.D. James and like Colin Dexter and,
okay.
and that type of writer that is just world famous. So she's considered the pioneer of the psychological thriller.
Okay.
And so something like... Before I Go to Sleep
right.
has a debt to her,
right.
I think. So in this book, she takes the... There are a few stories going on, and it can be kind of confusing because there's a lot of parallel things that are
mm-hmm.
happening. But the first story is about a young man who is obsessed with a serial killer that had lived in his neighborhood 50 years before, and he's also obsessed with a supermodel that lives down the street from him.
Oh, okay.
And
this is
so,
the recipe for disaster.
Yeah. And so he lives in just a decrepit mansion where he rents a flat from a woman that grew up in the mansion. So she is in her 70s or 80s at this point. And she is obsessed with this... doctor that had been treating her mother 50 years before, and she has created this romance in her mind of what had happened between them that you're very well aware that both of these characters are completely delusional.
Okay.
And so they're almost the same person, but they hate each other.
Oh, wow.
And so you know the terrible things are about to happen. And one of the obituaries I read about Ruth Rendell said it isn't so much finding out what happens, it's just the pleasure in getting there.
Right.
And so you also have the perspective of the model who has a little bit of her own delusion going on, but not quite to the extent of these two. But they're just, it's like you have this, you see this terrible ending sort of careening towards you, and you can't stop it, but you want to watch the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And so I just love it. I think that she's so skillful in how she creates this world, and she, it's set in contemporary London, and so... you feel like you're there, you feel like you know these roads, and you can picture everything and picture this neighborhood completely, but at the same time, there's this feeling of sort of oppressive dread that makes you sort of want to avoid reading anything about that place. And the first time I read it, I actually listened to it probably 5 or 6 years ago, mm-hmm. and I just had a terrible emotional reaction to this book. I sort of dragged myself into work every day and then thought, oh, I have to listen to that book again. It's so good, but this is so terrible.
Yeah.
These characters are just terrible people, but you completely want to see how it ends.
Yeah.
So my book club really loved it. And,
did they?
Some people thought it was too dark for them, but most of them just loved the journey.
Yeah,
so,
that sounds really good. I've never read her, and I really like psychological thrillers like that, so
yeah.
I'll have to pick that up. Or
she's a great...
Is that the one you would suggest picking up to start with for her?
You know, I don't know on that. She also writes a series that's more police procedural series, which is considered the sort of her... I don't know, her greatest works, but
right.
I don't see them as being quite the psychological books that these are. She also writes under the name Barbara Vine, and I read a book that's called Anna's Book, and I think that was the first one I had ever read of hers, and that one was a little less, it definitely has a psychology, but it isn't quite as creepy as this one, so I maybe would start with that one and then go a little
go
darker.
A little darker. Go a little deeper into the abyss of darkness. Well, that sounds... I'm going to have to add that one, too, because I do like those sorts of books. If I'm in the right mood, I have to be in the
right
mood for it, or else it just doesn't work for me at all.
Yeah.
But that sounds like something that if I'm in the right mood... That,
I think you'd really enjoy it.
Yeah.
She's just a great writer.
Okay.
Yeah. So how about you? What are you reading?
I am reading... I actually also just finished an audiobook that I want to talk about called Self-Inflicted Wounds by Aisha Tyler. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that... the subtitle is Heartwarming Tales of My Epic Humiliation. I might be getting that slightly wrong, but something like that. And Aisha Tyler, she's a comedian and an actress, and I think she's on a talk show now. I think I just read that, and I hadn't realized that. She might be on, not The View, but something like that. I don't
know. She used to do Talk Soup, or
she did Talk
Soup.
Or The Soup, right, but now...
It was Talk Soup at the time.
It was Talk Soup for a while,
yeah.
And now it's
I can't remember when she was on it.
Right.
But yeah,
she was
that.
And then now I think she's on some sort of daytime talk show.
Really?
Of course, since you and I work, we don't get to watch those probably, but anyway, so...
Gap in my pop culture.
I don't know those morning talk shows very well, but I think she is on one, or has been on one recently, maybe not currently. And this was really funny. It was sort of like in the vein of Bossy Pants by Tina Fey or the Mindy Kaling's Is Everybody Hanging Out Without Me, which they're funny. You know, I really liked it because I'm somebody who, I like humor when it's not mean-spirited. I can find some comedians to be a little bit harsh for my taste, like funny, but a little mean, you know? And I like ones that are just... in a little bit of a lighter tone, and because she focuses on all the times that she sort of made a fool out of herself or did really stupid things, it's very self-deprecating, and it's very funny, and she's very smart, and so it's just very easy to listen to, and she has a great way of delivering her own stories. You know, it's like sitting there with a friend telling about their night out that they went, you know, a few weeks ago and just made a complete fool out of themselves, and you just laugh and laugh and laugh. It's sort of like that, but there's also an element of, she talks about when she was growing up, her parents divorced. First of all, she describes them as hippie, and I want to say vegetarian or vegan. They might have been vegan before vegan was like the popular it is now.
Yeah.
And so she was this weird girl who was super tall, and she had these parents that didn't let her, she was wearing like hemp clothing and not allowed to eat meat. And so she was just kind of an odd duck. And then her parents got divorced and she lived with her father. And so she tells these stories of her father raising her, and he was just, you didn't mess with her dad. Like he just did not. And so he did things that people maybe look at as being a little unorthodox for raising your children. Like when she was maybe around 10, she had this crush on a boy. She just loved this boy, and she couldn't stop talking about him. She couldn't stop thinking about him. So her dad gave her like $60 and said, "Well, go take him out to dinner." And she invites this boy out to dinner, and he looks at her like she's crazy, because of course, who goes on dates when you're that age? But you know, he thought, "I'm going to get my daughter. She won't stop talking about it. So this is going to be the solution, right? Get her to go out at this point." So she just tells it in such a very funny way, and like I said, self-deprecating. Like, she doesn't make herself sound like this, you know, super famous person.
Yeah.
Like, I think she probably realizes that she's as famous as she is, which
right.
is that not everybody would know her name, but a
right.
lot of people know her name. And there are stories about her getting her starting her career in comedy and how hard that was and how much work it took, which I always like hearing those stories
yeah.
too. You know, there aren't these overnight sensations often
right.
aren't really overnight sensations.
Right.
Like, you hear that there's a lot of background work and how much failure that goes on and a lot of the fear that comes from being a stand-up comedian, because you're putting yourself out in front of people
mm-hmm.
And they can laugh or not laugh.
Right,
and, you know,
right.
there's this immediate response. So there was just a lot of really good stuff to listen to. And she just has a very easy way of telling these stories that's fun to sit and listen to. In fact, I went on Goodreads when I was posting that I had read that and
mm-hmm.
read some reviews. And some people who had read the book, the print book, hadn't liked her style in writing because they felt like it was sort of full of run-on sentences and she has footnotes or asides
mm-hmm.
that didn't flow very well. And I thought that's where that audio format really
Definitely.
Came through
yeah.
because her voice is telling those stories. So the way she's writing is probably how she's thinking it.
Right.
And that's how she's speaking it. And maybe reading it doesn't work quite as well. And that's just a small sampling of the reviews. I'm sure generally
right.
people liked the book. But I think that this is, if you do audio, this is an audio to pick up over the book. Because
right.
hearing it in her own voice with the inflections and everything is
right.
really priceless.
Well, that was the same thing with Bossy Pants, too.
Right.
Like, there are parts where, and that's when I listened to,
mm-hmm.
but and I'm not even sure how Tina Fey wrote the parts where she's doing that sotto voce thing where
yes,
she
right.
says something to kind of undermine
everything
right,
that she
right, just said
right.
Under her breath. And I don't know how she indicated that in the
yeah.
form, but that's what she's famous for.
Right.
That's her entire style is based on that. And so I'm all for listening to especially memoirs.
Memoirs, when they work really well.
Yeah.
yeah. Especially when you get somebody who's an actor, an actress,
right.
or has done stuff like that, because they're trained to speak in a way
right.
that's easy, not too fast, not too slow,
right.
you know, and not too monotone.
Right.
They have a lot of expression in their voice. So yeah, it's right in that same wheelhouse right there as with those other ones. But I think less well known because I think she's less well known.
Right.
But it was a really fun read. Listen, that's hard to distinguish.
Whenever I write my reviews and it's something I listen to, I think, whoa.
Well, did I read this?
Yeah,
did I listen?
How do I describe this?
Yeah.
So.
Well, before we finish up, should we go back and say the titles and authors of everything
sure.
we mentioned?
Okay.
Just so that if you want to do all the ones you did, and then I'll do all the ones
okay.
I did.
So my first was Little Beach Street Bakery by Jenny Colgan. The second was All the Old Knives by Olin Steinhauer. And then The Talented Mr. Ripley by Patricia Highsmith. And the book I was reading this week was 13 Steps Down by Ruth Rendell.
Okay, and mine were Second Chance Summer by Morgan Matson, Before I Go to Sleep by S.J. Watson, and Beautiful Ruins by Jess Walter. And then the book I'm reading this week was Self-Inflicted Wounds by Aisha Tyler. Well, thanks so much, Anne. This was so much
yeah,
fun.
Totally.
This is our first podcast, our inaugural podcast. We're so excited. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at wellreadpod@gmail.com or on Twitter at wellreadpodcast. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We welcome all feedback. Our theme music is Kitten by Paddington Bear. Thank you all for listening, and happy reading.